Are you ready to make the most of your oil and gas mineral rights? Welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. Get the knowledge and resources you need to manage your minerals and royalties. Here is your host, Matt Sands.
Hello and welcome to the Mineral Rights Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Sands, and I'm here to help you make the most of your mineral rights and royalties. And my co-host, Justin Williams, joins me as well. Hey, Justin.
Hey, good morning, man.
How are you doing today?
Doing good. Getting close to Christmas, so now the rush begins.
Yeah, now the rush begins. You know, I've been doing a little bit of Christmas shopping, but I am definitely not ready. So we've got 10 days till Christmas as of the time we're recording this. So like you said, the rush is on, and I have a feeling that I can't wait to the last minute like I normally do because of supply chain issues and shipping and all that. I think I probably need to be a little more proactive, so I'm planning on wrapping that up this week. But yeah, it kind of snuck up on us this year, I feel like.
It sure did. It just came right in quick, and I'm with you. A couple months ago, I was saying, oh, I'm going to be done very early in December, and now here we are, so time to get to it.
That's right. Well, you know, we're going to talk about questions that we've gotten this year. The end of the year has kind of crept up on us, like we mentioned, and I realized that we have a lot of questions that were unanswered. So that's the focus of today's episode, and that is to answer your questions that were submitted over the past several months. This covers a lot of them. I've replied to a lot of your emails separately, and you know, a lot of those were offline and aren't in today's podcast episode, but just know that if you have a question, don't hesitate to reach out. You can send an email to feedback@mineralrightspodcast.com. There is no such thing as a dumb question, just a question that you don't ask. And so if you have a question related to your minerals and royalties and are really struggling with something, don't hesitate to reach out. If it's something that we can answer in an email and in a quick way, we'll happy to do so, or at least be able to hopefully share some information to help you get started in the right direction. Another thing that we have in the backlog, Justin, are shout outs. Do you want to go ahead and start off with the first shout out?
Yep, absolutely. So our first one here is by Unhappy Walker. And he says, powerful info, three cheers. And thank you, Walker. We greatly appreciate that. Next one here, so glad I found the Mineral Rights Podcast. Family inherited mineral rights from our great-grandmother, Civil War widow. I have had to learn as much as I can about mineral rights to verify the details of our ownership and earnings. MRP has been a fabulous resource, and I'm truly grateful to Matt and his team for invaluable information he provides. Thanks, Matt, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for the rating and review. And what we're reading are the reviews that were left on Apple Podcasts. So if you want a shout out, please go ahead and leave us a rating and review. It definitely is the best way you can help us reach everybody that needs to hear this information, and helps us feel good about ourselves as well. So I'll go ahead and read the next one here, and it's from B. Betty, and she says, great, covers so much ground. This podcast is full of useful information, helps to answer outstanding questions and formulate new ones. Even somewhat experienced owners can glean a good bit of information in each episode. Matt and his co-host, typically Justin, explain in ways that are deep and yet easy to understand. There's so few resources for owners. I'm glad to have found this one. Well, thank you, Betty.
Absolutely. And the next one here, a must-listen podcast for mineral owners. My cousins and I inherited mineral rights from our parents and grandparents, and we didn't know anything, including what we had. I volunteered to begin unraveling the puzzle, and this is one of the resources I'm using to do just that. I'm learning more with every podcast I listen to, and I still have quite a few to catch up on, and the tools and links that are provided are helpful. So thank you so much. We appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll read the last one here, and it says, very informative. My family became owners of mineral rights in Oklahoma thanks to a distant family member. We had no idea how they worked, paid out, etc. Matt and Justin are excellent at explaining even the smallest detail of what it means to own minerals in the United States. So thanks again to everybody that wrote in and left a rating and review. Greatly appreciate it. So Justin, what do you say we just dive into the questions?
Let's do it. So our first question here is from Pat. My husband started with 10.5%. Brother died and got 6.2% from that. Her mother died and got 8.4% from her. Called BP and they checked the archives and emailed a percentage of for each. And this was in 2008 that it shows each addition from deaths. Checking statements from 2011 listed on his original percentage. What can I do? So Matt, this is that, you know, I think this is a really, really common one that comes up and trying to get all that sorted sometimes. Not that the oil companies are trying to hassle you, but it's confusing on their end as well.
That's a great point. Yeah. And, you know, they do a good job, I'll say, of identifying each of the owners when they drill the well. That is through what's called a title opinion. So they get a title opinion for that division order when they send it out to all the owners so that they know exactly who is actually owns a percentage in those wells. And so they're paying the right people. And so that is something they do up front. But then over time, you know, you have these wells that are producing and then people will pass away and or sell their minerals to somebody else. And then the onus is on the owner to notify the company of those changes in ownership. So it's very common, like you said, Justin, for a company to be paying on a certain percentage and maybe you inherited more. And, you know, in this case, like Pat said, she got a certain percentage from her husband, brother, and then mother. And so there's three separate interests that she inherited all in these same wells. But it sounds like maybe she was only being paid on the one original interest. And so what you need to do is contact the current operator. And if that's BP, that, you know, contact BP's owner relations department and just ask them what documentation they need from you in order to transfer your brother and mother's interest to you as well. You know, you might need to go through probate. That's usually what happens when you inherit property in order to make sure that you're the right heir to that property. You have to go through a process called probate. And that might be something that you need to do, depending on which state it is and how long ago all of this was. And what you would need to do is just hire an attorney in the state where those minerals are located so that they can help you prepare the necessary documents to go through probate or to provide whatever documentation BP needs in order to put you in pay status on those additional interests. Now, the good thing is, if you haven't been getting paid on those percentages for the other interests that you inherited, you know, down the road, what typically happens is the operator puts those in what's called suspense. So that means they're just holding those royalties that were owed to your brother and to your mother in this case, and just waiting to find out who the rightful heir is so that they can pay that person, in your case, you. So what you would need to do, again, just to go through, contact the operator, find out what information they need, and then go from there. And, you know, it is something where you just need to stay on it. I know BP specifically, I've dealt with them, and it takes time. The squeaky wheel gets the grease. I would both email and call them. Don't hesitate to bug them if you haven't heard from them in a week or two. What happens when you send an email with a company, a large company like that, is they send you an automated response back, says, here's your ticket number. We'll get to you in, you know, 10 business days or something crazy. And so you just got to be the squeaky wheel, you know, that gets the grease, and so that you get the information you need in a timely manner. Because if you wait, then it's just going to sit out there for longer. So good luck, and, you know, let us know how it goes.
Absolutely. You know, I think that is such a common thing for the oil and gas companies for changing the ownership. Like Matt said, you just got to be the squeaky wheel and continue to contact them so you can get some movement. All right, Matt, here's our next one. And NRA and NMA, it's something that I still struggle with at times, and I think it's really a top question that we get from people. The question here is, I just watched your video on NRA, and I was wondering if you could help me with the following. If I own 10 NMA net mineral acres, and I want to calculate the NRA net royalty acres, is this the formula to calculate? The net mineral acres multiplied by the royalty rate multiplied by 8. Angela ended it by saying, I really appreciate you providing the podcast and your help in advance to my question.
Yeah. And so Angela, in her email, she had a formula here. It was 10 multiplied by 0.1875, which I assume is her royalty rate, times 8 equals NRA, or 15. So the answer to your question, Angela, is yes, you did a great job of getting that right. And it's a very simple equation, you know, like she outlined. It is a confusing topic, but it's a very simple formula to calculate it. And the concept of NRA, we covered that in a whole episode. It's episode 18, what's the difference between a net mineral acre and a net royalty acre? So definitely go back and listen to that if this is a new concept for you, because we cover that in a lot more detail and we go through and how to calculate this. And definitely something where you need to know Just a couple of things. All you need to know is the number of net mineral acres that you own, and then your lease royalty rate, which is the royalty showing up on your oil and gas lease. And that's not your decimal interest. That's the percentage. So if you agreed to 1/8 royalty or 3/16 or quarter, whatever the royalty rate is, that is what you would put in. And the whole purpose of the NRA is sort of like a normalized way to identify what you own in that acreage. So if you have, say, one net mineral acre, and they baseline it to a 1/8 royalty. And the reason for that is that's kind of the minimum, right? So if you end up agreeing to a 1/4 royalty, for example, that means you have two net royalty acres, even though you only have one net mineral acre. So the whole purpose of it is basically to use as a baseline for identifying prices that were paid for property, to have an idea for what the royalty rate was, because that will determine how much somebody's willing to pay for a property is based on how much they're going to get in return, you know, in terms of royalties. And so if you have a higher royalty rate, you'll get paid higher. So you have higher net royalty acres. So again, it's just a concept that's used in the industry, something that's useful to have if you're interested in understanding how much your property's worth and baselining that and against other properties in your area. Again, just a couple of things you need to know. Just go to mineralrightspodcast.com and search for episode 18, though, and there's a link to download a free worksheet that I put together that you can plug in your information to calculate your net royalty acres. So hopefully that's helpful, and thanks again for your question.
All right, so our next question here is from Joe, and Joe says, "Hello, Matt. I own a few acres of mineral rights in Kingfisher, Oklahoma. There is one working well on the lease, and permits have been issued for 4 more wells. I would like to know what to expect on royalty increases once the additional wells are brought online. Will all wells work at one time, or will they be staggered? Will the company attempt to recover the cost of drilling as quickly as possible? If so, how long, how many days and months will it take to recover these expenses?" And Joe goes on to say, "Assuming once costs are covered, the wells will pump less. Would this assumption be correct? Any information you can provide will be appreciated."
Yeah, thanks for your question, Joe. So first of all, congratulations on the new wells being permitted on your acreage. And now there's, I guess, two parts to this question. There's the easy answer, which may apply. And that is in terms of the royalty increase, once these new wells are drilled and completed and start producing, this is something you can calculate on your own. Like I said, there's like the easy way, the quick way, assuming that all of the wells are in the same drilling spacing unit as the first well, and the same percentage of your property is in this DSU, then the same decimal interest should apply. Now, there's a lot of caveats and a lot of nuance to this, but I'll just say that, you know, in general, you can probably approximate how much you're going to get paid based on that existing well. So that would be taking the decimal interest from that existing well. You have 4 additional wells coming online, and that is a good starting point. Now, I'll say the right way to do this when you get the division orders for those new wells once they start producing is to go through the process of calculating your net revenue interest. Again, this is something you're going to have to do anyway to verify that decimal interest on the division order before you sign it to make sure it's correct. And so in that case, what you would need to do is go to the Oklahoma Corporation Commission website. You look up your property via the legal description, which it sounds like you already know how to do that since you know that there are 4 wells permitted. And for those listening who might not be familiar, you could either look for the township range and section, or the legal description is what that's called, or by browsing on the map until you find that section where you own interests, and then look at the well in question, the producing well, and then you can, or ideally the permitted wells, click on the well documents for those wells. You're going to want to look for the drilling permit, which in Oklahoma is Form 1000. And there it'll list the spacing orders that apply, and they'll have a CD number that's shown for each of those spacing orders or increased density orders. And then you're going to have to do another search on the OCC website, because unfortunately they don't have a hyperlink on that well permit, but you can just Google OCC increased density order search or spacing order search, and it'll probably link you in one of the first search results there to the other part of the OCC website where you can search for those documents. And you're going to probably need to do a few clicks to find the document you're looking for. You want to look for the order, and then there'll be some exhibits that go along with it that'll have a plat. And that's what you ultimately want to look at, is and or look at the legal description in that application for that pooling or spacing order. And so that'll have the legal description of that drilling spacing unit there and the size of it. And usually nowadays they're drilling 2 mile lateral wells, so it'll be a 1280 acre DSU. And you can see, again, based on the description of that DSU, which sections are included. And assuming that you are fully, if your minerals are fully within that DSU, you can use that to then basically divide your net mineral acres divided by the number of acres in the DSU, multiply that by your royalty rate, and then figure out your net revenue interest. Now, there's a lot of nuance to this. Again, you can listen to episode 3, where I talk about how to calculate your net revenue interest in a well and go through that step by step. So if you're in this situation and need to verify division order and that decimal interest, go through and listen to that episode. And then we have some downloads as well that'll help you walk through that process. And then also episode 16, where we talk about division orders and that whole process. But just once you know that decimal interest for those new wells, in order to figure out how much you're going to get paid in terms of the royalties, there is basically a couple of other things you need to take into account. And that is the expected production rate from these new wells, you know, on a monthly basis, and then what the price of oil or price of gas is when those wells start producing. Now, that'll give you a rough estimate how much you should get paid as far as royalties. Now, that's before severance taxes and any other deductions are taken out, depending on the terms of your lease. But it's a good baseline way of figuring out roughly how much you should be getting paid once those wells start producing. And in order to find the expected production from these new wells, it could be a very involved technical process that you would want to hire a petroleum engineer to do, but you can sort of approximate it just by looking at that existing well, you know, assuming that these new wells are being drilled in the same formation, they're roughly the same length, assuming that first well is a horizontal well as well. And you can use that first well as a rough approximation for how much these new wells should produce. Now, it's going to vary obviously from that, but you know, just as far as getting a ballpark number, that's probably the quickest and easiest way to check that. And you can find that information again on the OCC website. You can look for the production from that well, go back to when it first started producing in that first month or two, and that'll give you a feel for what these new wells should do in the first couple of months. You know, again, keep in mind things could be higher or lower than those offset wells or that other well than you're on your property, because there's a lot of factors at play. But it's a good way to figure out how much you could expect if you have a new well drilled on your property, you know, how much you're going to get paid. Now, Justin, he asks a couple of other questions about, will the company stagger this over time? Will they be brought online all at the same time? Do you want to talk a little bit about your experience and kind of what your take on that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my experience, if they're working to drill two wells, they will try to bring those on as simultaneous as they can. But in my experience, typically they drill one, get it into completion and producing, and then they move on to drilling that next and so on and so forth.
Yeah. So just like Justin said, what they're going to try to do is knock those out as quick as possible, because ultimately, if they're not producing, they're not generating cash flow for the company to help pay back that initial investment. So when they drill a well and they spend, you know, the millions of dollars it takes to drill a horizontal well nowadays, they'll want to complete it right away, so that it can start generating some cash to pay back that investment. Now, the only exception to that is, let's say we go into a situation like we saw in 2020 when the market shut down, price of oil went negative. A lot of operators shut in wells and maybe they delayed completing new wells until the prices recovered. So the only exception to that would be if we had a crash in the market and the prices went really low for maybe an extended period of time. But based on where we're at today, you know, around $70 a barrel for oil, they're going to want to take advantage of that and maximize the amount of production they start producing right away so that they can start to pay that back. Because more than likely, when they were running economics for these wells, it was probably at a little bit lower oil price. And so, you know, they were incentivized to start producing and paying back that investment right away. And you know, like Justin said, if they drill all the wells around the same time, they'll usually complete them together. So what happens is you'll have the rig come on to that pad, drill those four additional wells, it'll demobilize, and then they'll bring a completions crew in, and then they'll complete those all together, and they should produce roughly around the same time period. It may be a few days or a few weeks between when each of those wells comes online, but should be roughly the same time period. And, you know, they typically don't produce wells in series just in general. I think if I understand your question correctly, they're not going to produce one well until it stops producing and then go and complete that next well and produce it until it stops producing. They do these in parallel. So if they're drilling four additional wells, they're going to drill those all together, complete them all together, start producing them together. You know, again, a lot of nuance to all this stuff depends on if there is takeaway capacity and pipeline. So the, you know, they're going to try to basically maximize production, let it flow naturally. Now they may choke it back just to the extent that they are maximizing the productivity of those wells so that they don't produce too quickly, deplete the pressure in the reservoir too quickly, but it doesn't have anything to do with the payback on those wells. So to your final question around once costs are recovered, the wells will pump less, that is actually not correct. So what they will do is it'll happen that those wells are producing less once they have paid back. You know, if you figure it takes maybe a couple of years for these wells hit break even to where they hit payback, just by virtue of the way that these wells, the production rate declines on these wells, it will be less than it is at the very beginning of that well life. But that has nothing to do with, you know, how close they are to payback and anything like that. They're going to really look at, it's going to be an engineering decision as to how they're producing those wells. Reservoir engineer working with production engineer is going to look at how do we make sure that we don't damage the formation or we don't mess up that well by producing it too quickly or by shutting it in for an extended period of time or producing it too slowly. So they're going to try to optimize that really regardless of the economic condition of that well and whether or not it's paid back. And the reason for that is just very simple. It's just time value of money. So they're going to want to produce, you know, more as quickly as possible with, again, within those constraints that I mentioned, because the sooner they can produce that barrel of oil and sell it and get paid for it, it's worth more today than if they wait a couple of years to produce that barrel or MCF of gas. And again, especially with inflation going in the direction that it's headed, you know, they're going to want to make sure they're producing it now versus 3 or 4 years from now. So hopefully that answers your questions, Joe. Thanks again for writing in.
Absolutely. And always interesting when you get into those questions and answers, Matt, because that, like you were saying, there's so many elements that can have an impact on what the answer really ends up being. So though it's a great general guideline, really got to look into the individual situation, see what's going on. So our next one here is from Brian. And Brian says, I'm writing you from my hometown of Washington, D.C. My family has held legacy minerals in West Texas since the 1920s. We've received royalties from Sunco for the past 20 plus years and nothing life changing. I recently made the trip out west and noticed several additional units that are producing along with several older ones that are not. Needless to say, we are not leased down to any of these. I'm not sure where the disconnect is. Some of the lot lines are vague due to the markers being iron poles and mesquite trees, but it's all there from what I can tell. Public records indicate that there are at least 5 operators that are drilling, have drilled, and or have permits on those lands. I would like to investigate all this. Lots of probate will also have to be done to figure out what lands we actually have. We often receive letters from landmen inquiring about lands unbeknown to us. Lastly, in a perfect world, I would like to facilitate further exploration of those tracks. Best luck to you and your team. Hope to hear from you. Cheers, Brian. So, Matt, this is this hits home because I find myself in this very similar situation. And there's so many things that could really be impacting this. One of the things that I ran into very early on was having to go back and really look very closely at leases. If this is an overriding royalty that's tied to a lease or something of that nature, there's no guarantee that those new operators are operating under the lease which you are bound by. And that, in my case, it happened several times. There can be other things. It could be that the operator should be paying you. And a great thing to do is to pick up the phone and call those operators and see if you can get an answer. Though if you are not an owner, they don't always have a reason to give you a call back. And the Texas Railroad Commission is a really great resource to look at the lease boundaries and the maps and the GIS. They also have lots of information on permits and other things like that that you can look into. Matt, what else?
You hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, it depends on the documentation. So I think the first step is certainly to perform a title search to find out more, to get copies of all those relevant documents, like Justin mentioned, like deeds, leases, assignments, and that sort of a thing. Another thing is that it could be there are title defects with your minerals to where you are owed royalties on those additional wells, but you need to clear up title before you can get paid. And that's the reason that you're not getting paid today. So what that would look like is if you inherited these properties, but they didn't go through probate. You know, you mentioned the term probate in there, and that you need to probably go through that on all these, on these lands. And certainly that is absolutely correct. If you haven't gone through probate, that is probably one of the things that's playing into why you're not getting paid on those additional wells. And, you know, like Justin said, it's simply a matter of contacting the operator, find out what documentation they'll need from you to put you in pay status. It could be, you know, again, going through that ancillary probate in that county where those minerals are located in order to get that all cleared up so that they're comfortable that you are the rightful heir to that property. And that's just a matter of really finding a qualified attorney in that state, in this case, Texas. We have some information on the website on other attorneys. You know, rather than making a recommendation here, you know, you can ask around. Mineral Rights Forum is a good place to ask for people's experiences working with attorneys and folks that are familiar with minerals and royalties. There are a few listed there that pay to get listed on that website, but those are some good starting points. As far as looking at the other thing, lease boundaries that Justin mentioned, could be that it appears that these wells are on your property or should be something you're getting paid on, but you have to potentially dig a little bit deeper, look at the Texas Railroad Commission website, look at that well, pull up a copy of the permit and the plat, you know, for when that well was permitted and shows the lease boundary, because it could be that your acreage is actually not in that spacing unit or that lease for that new well. And so you really have to just look at it on a well-by-well basis so you can make sure that, you know, either you are in that and then you should be getting paid. And then again, that would be the basis for contacting the operator and saying, hey, I have this property. Here's a legal description. Looks like this well is producing from these minerals. You know, I believe I should be getting paid. And can you tell me what documentation you need to put us in pay status and go from there? So in order to find out, you know, it sounds like too, you're getting calls out of the blue, which I know, Justin, you were getting a lot of calls from when you first found out about this. You want to talk a little bit about the process you went through to sort of identify some other properties maybe that you had an interest in that you didn't know about? What were the steps that you went through to do that?
Absolutely. The very best tool I found was once I had some idea, either via the letter or the phone call, what county that these properties were in, I was able to go to the county tax assessor and see what records they had for the property as far as an owner went. And sometimes you can do that by looking up the property itself. Sometimes you can do that by looking up either your ancestor's name, your current name, to see who the tax rolls. I found that when you're receiving those letters or those phone calls, that tax assessor information is public record. And so that a lot of times is their starting point from where they're actually creating those letters or sending out those offer letters. So it's always good to know what information starts there. It's not always accurate. And if you haven't probated, it could still be in the ancestor's name, but it's a great starting point to look at. From there, you're just going to have to really dive deep into looking at public records as far as titles and deeds and those kinds of things. And once I found somebody who could help with that and was able to really start understanding that, that's where the magic really was able to happen, because once I caught a whiff of the county, I could go into that county's public records and start looking for documents that were related to the names that I was looking for.
Yeah, that's it. Those are all excellent points. And if you need help and want to know where to get started in order to perform a title search on your property as well, you can go listen to episode 10 where we cover that in more detail. But that's definitely something you can do on your own. There's a lot of resources available online that allow you to search for records in that county, even if you can't get there in person to search for those. There's plenty of websites, whether the county itself has it available to search, or products like Enveris is DI Courthouse or TexasFile.com, where you have to pay potentially a little bit of money to do a search, but you can get those documents from the comfort of your own home. And I think Enveris, that DI Courthouse, has a free trial still, that you can get $100 worth of documents and download those before you have to start paying out of pocket. So that's a great resource as well for mineral and royalty owners who just need to do a title search for one or two properties. And, you can get copies of those without hopefully having to pay too much or anything at all. So good luck. Hopefully that leads you in the right direction, and let us know how it goes.
All right. So our next question here from Josh. He says, I'm new to the world of mineral rights. I've been enjoying listening to your podcast as I try to get up to speed on mineral rights. We primarily lease our minerals, and one of the challenges is finding the right price for a lease. Do you have a podcast on the topic of pricing a lease? We have another question from Al here, who says, I'm an owner on various mineral rights in Oklahoma. What do you do when you receive a low ball bonus offer? So these are both kind of related, Matt. And, I think for whatever reason, when you're doing a lease, having multiple companies compete against each other isn't always the first thing that comes to mind, but it often is the best thing to get a good price.
That's exactly right. So, if you receive a low offer, or if you don't know if it's a good offer or not, you want to know about how a lease should be priced. There's some homework you can do. And in Al's case, he mentions that most of his properties are in Oklahoma. We don't know where Josh owns minerals, but so let's start with Al's question, because there's a specific resource in Oklahoma that you can find some really relevant information about leasing offers and terms. And when you receive a low bonus offer, regardless of where it's located, first of all, I would take that as an opening offer to negotiation. And to Justin's point, you usually want to get a couple of competing offers so that you can understand if that first offer you got was actually representative of the current market, or were they actually giving you a lowball offer. And, getting multiple offers will help you figure that out. And then also in Oklahoma, the Oklahoma Corporation Commission has information about pooling orders. And because Oklahoma requires operators to make fair market lease offers in forced pooling scenarios based on other leases in that area over the past 12 months, you can actually look this up for nearby pooling orders in your area to get an idea of what operators are paying for oil and gas leases. And so you'll get ideas of terms of royalty rates, bonuses, and the combination. So usually there's a couple different options. It might be, a 25% royalty with a low bonus, maybe a 20% royalty with the medium bonus, and then a lower royalty, like a 3/16 royalty with the highest bonus. And so it's up to you to figure out what you think is the best in your circumstance. In general, what I do, and this is not advice, whether it's legal or investment advice, this is just my personal preference, is I usually try to go for the highest royalty and cost-free provisions in that lease, even if it means that I have to accept a lower lease bonus. And again, that's because, especially if it's a productive area, that there's a high likelihood that the well is going to be successful, you're going to get more in terms of royalties over the life of that well. It would recoup the loss or the less amount of upfront money that you would get from that lease bonus. And so that's just what I kind of tend to prefer. And the other thing to keep in mind is when you end up signing a lease with a lower royalty rate, you're actually impacting the value of your minerals if you're going to look to sell down the road. And that's because a buyer is going to look at what your royalty rate is, and that's going to determine the cash flow that they're going to get from that in terms of future royalties when a new well comes online, or when that current well keeps producing. So again, if you were to accept the highest, let's say, just for example, the highest lease bonus and a 12.5% royalty versus maybe no lease bonus and a 25% royalty, well, you're actually going to get, your property is going to be worth two times as much if you accepted that 25% royalty versus if you had accepted the 12.5% royalty when you go to sell, or when you look at getting a value for that property, just again, because that lease will be tied to that property. And once it's held by production. It's going to be producing for a long time. So you got to keep that in mind. And again, the we'll have links in the show notes to where you can find out more about the Oklahoma pooling orders and where you can search for those in the process there. And then for negotiating tactics, I really like the book, Never Split the Difference by the former FBI hostage negotiator, Chris Voss. And you can find a link to this book in the resources section of my website. So Justin, you want to talk about how to find the right price for a lease? So that kind of covers, I think, Oklahoma specifically, and then some general things, but what are some other resources out there for people to think about?
Absolutely. And you know, the Mineral Rights Forum is a really great place to look and see what other people in that area have been talking about for leasing bonuses. That seems to be information that people are regularly putting out there. Neighbors, family members are also a great way to find out about other offers and other terms. And as we talked about before, getting competing offers is a really fabulous way. In addition to that, there's also attorneys who in your area, most likely that's one of the things that they do is negotiate lease offers. And if you can find the right person, they often have a good idea of what boots are on the ground and what companies might be interested or close to develop those minerals, which would mean they'd be willing to pay just a little bit more. To that effect, you can also look and see what oil and gas companies have been filing records in that area to see who might be interested. And that can help you to build your list of companies that you're going to reach out to and get lease offers from. So Matt, there's a lot of different ways. And you know, I think some people have better success with some than others. And it really just depends how much legwork you want to do versus finding somebody who will take a percentage of that lease or lease bonus in exchange for doing that work for you.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, what, like Justin mentioned, you know, when you go to negotiate an oil and gas lease, this is definitely a time where it is worth hiring a qualified attorney to get help because these are complex legal documents. You know, I've never seen two oil and gas leases that are alike. And so the language in those leases will dictate a lot in terms of how much you actually get paid. You know, especially in Oklahoma, you know, like in Al's case, they have pretty liberal laws around what operators can deduct in terms of post-production costs from natural gas in particular. And so you'd really want to try to make sure that you negotiate a lease that minimizes the amount of post-production costs that get deducted from your royalty checks. Now, especially if they are gas wells and have a lot of natural gas liquids, because that can add up quite a bit and to a significant percentage. And even if you had negotiated the best royalty, if you don't have favorable terms from a post-production cost standpoint, you could still be getting paid a lot less than you expect. So, you know, keep that in mind. Good attorney is worth their weight in gold in this scenario. You know, and again, like Justin said, you know, get multiple offers, reach out to other companies that have recently recorded leases or a memorandum of lease in your area in that county. And again, you just do a quick search in the county clerk and recorder, either in person or online, to find that out. And you can get a good list of companies to contact, get some competing offers to find out what the going rate is, and then go from there. So, you know, again, this isn't legal or financial advice. So get that attorney on your side. And like Justin mentioned, you know, you can potentially, they'll have helped other mineral owners recently negotiate probably with that same company or with other companies in the area and know, oh yeah, this is the going rate and this is what you can get for that. So hope that helps and good luck. And thanks to everyone again for writing in with your questions. And again, apologies to those of you that it took us a while to answer your question, but keep the questions coming in. You can send those to feedback@mineralrightspodcast.com and we'll answer your question on the air, or at least give you an email response to help you out and steer you in the right direction. So thanks again for listening. And thanks, Justin.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks so much for listening to the Mineral Rights Podcast with your host, Matt Sands. Don't forget to subscribe and share at mineralrightspodcast.com. The Mineral Rights Podcast should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy.